This is We Are What We Overcome. What you're about to hear are the ramblings and reflections of three ordinary people, drawing on their own personal and occasionally professional experiences. These conversations are unprepared, subjective, and should not be taken as medical advice or instruction. Anyone seeking help should always carry out their own research, or better yet, speak to a professional about their circumstances.
Oh, did it say that to everybody? Go, recording in progress. Oh, that's very disturbing. All right, then. So it appears to be recording. Should we do one of my laughable usual count-ins? Let's go. Three. Oh, fuck's sake. Two.
Well, Tom, Nick, that was great. Wes spoke to me beforehand, and we reckoned that you still haven't learned how to count down from three. And I said he probably hasn't. You're right, Wes, he hasn't.
That's a tenner you owe me.
We Are What We Overcome on this occasion features musician Matt McGuinness, improviser Nick Tyler, and psychotherapist Wes Evans. Sit back, enjoy, and remember, it's good to talk.
I know the numbers, just not what order they go in, or how to relate that to the physical presence of my fingers.
Anyway, welcome to We Are What We Overcome, the podcast about mental health and all those associated things around it. And this month, we're going to talk about how you feel about receiving information from a friend, whether that be where you're pushing someone or trying to get someone to talk to you, and then you're not quite prepared for them to actually open up, and then what you do with that information. And you were saying, Wes, as well, weren't you, about people just opening up anyway without having to be pushed, and how we deal with that.
Absolutely. I suppose not even just friends. I mean, it's quite strange how sometimes just strangers can end up sharing things with one another. So I suppose we're just talking about what it's like to be on the receiving end of potentially heavy stuff, aren't we?
Yeah.
What that's like, and we'll go from there, I suppose.
Okay.
All right, shall we check in, see how we're doing? How are you, Mr. Mitch?
I'm good. I've been sorting out flagpoles today. So there we go.
What a day.
I have a varied life.
You can't just say that. I mean, that is really random.
Oh, come on, Wes.
Sorting out flagpoles.
I think everyone will understand exactly what Matt means. It's a euphemism.
It's a carry-on thing. It's actual flagpoles made of fiberglass. Mm-hmm. And it's basically for festivals to put them up. But how do you stake them in the ground without breaking them? That's been my thoughts in the sunshine, and it's fixed, which involves broom handles. But anyway, more answers later. Yeah. How are you, Wes?
I'm good. Sorry that I was feeling the absence last time. I've not been able to join you guys for what was definitely an emotive and striking kind of conversation. But yeah, glad to be here again this time. And aside from the typical story of being busy, 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 I've gotten married since we last spoke.
No.
Yeah. So well done, sir. I'm now a married man. So Matt, hold back your advances. It's no longer possible.
I was about to say something really inappropriate then. Even more attractive.
Oh, she's finally made a decent man of you. That's good.
Wanting what you can't have and all that. Eh? There's a future topic. But also today, we're having a weekend of just sorting stuff out, decluttering and organising and things like that, which maybe is another future topic, actually. But yeah, that's me. I'm okay. Glad to be back and in and amongst decluttering. What about you, Nick?
Well, I know how that feels. Yeah, decluttering has been my life for weeks now. And I guess last week was kind of a decluttering as well, kind of a brain decluttering, sort of where it came from rereading through some counselling diaries as part of uncovering and moving a lot of stuff, both physical and emotional. I see all those as the same activities, since I have quite an emotional connection to all of the stuff. It's not really that different in my head. So I am all right. I say vaguely reeling from last month, actually. It was surprisingly wearing to dive back into counselling diaries and things a decade ago. Useful, I think. And I've been grateful for how some people have replied to it and appear to have enjoyed it, despite it not being particularly enjoyable to listen to someone go through all that stuff.
Did you want to quickly say what it was about for those people who aren't following every word we say?
Unbelievable that someone might not be doing that. So last week I went back through some of the counselling diaries that I maintained after being in counselling sessions, which makes sense, as a sort of sexual abuse survivor, and reread some of the entries that seemed relevant or interesting or just ironic and amusing, depending on how I felt. Mostly because it's interesting to be able to have an opportunity to look back on yourself from 10 years ago and kind of be in conversation with an earlier version of yourself from a position of some, you know, detachment through time, and feel a little bit what it's like to re-explore a set of feelings or a set of mental states and see if they're still the same mental states that you have now, as I find these things wear down a little bit with time and with repetition. So it's a valuable exercise for me to be able to go through it and see whether it still creates the same spikes of anxiety, fear and horror or whatever. And it does, but to a much lesser extent. I think genuinely interesting, but I was quite frazzled by the end of it. So I guess...
We went to the pub, didn't we?
We did. That was very necessary. It's really, really necessary. But I guess that's given me a perspective on this week's conversation of... I guess I was kind of giving information to myself, which is strange, and had to both deliver that information and receive it, which is an odd position to be in. But I'm sure we'll come to that. So I'm all right. Thank you. It feels fairly sane.
Hats off to you for doing it, Nick. I'm sure you felt all sorts of things, but I'm also sure that it was very useful for people listening, actually.
I hope so. I think, yeah, we've said before, it's quite hard to explain what happens in counselling. You know, you're not necessarily lying down on a couch or all that sort of nonsense. That's Freudian psychoanalysis, and no one really does that anymore. So maybe some insight is useful to others.
They should do, shouldn't they? I think that's a missing trick, actually.
Well, until it's all about
where you can go in and they smoke a pipe whilst you lie on a couch, and they talk about nothing but your mother. That'd be brilliant.
Wow.
I suppose if you were concerned about passive smoking, it could just be one of those bubble packs, couldn't it?
That's true. Yeah, I mean, you seem very into this idea, Matt. Perhaps it is something that you should explore.
Yeah, no, I'd be up for it. You'd have to get a waiver from them, though, wouldn't you? That would be it, with the smoking and stuff. And I don't think it would work without the smoking. Anyway.
Definitely not, no. Lovely. All right. Well, should we get into our topic? Instead of with pipe smoking and couch lying. Oh, very odd.
So we're talking about being on the receiving end of emotional stuff, heavy stuff, or serious stuff, I suppose, in one way or another. Whether that's someone that you're trying to encourage to speak out, someone that just ends up doing it, someone you know, someone you don't know. And yes, I've had some strangers open up to me. I don't know whether you guys have.
Classic bus stop conversations. Hmm.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. Queuing for the toilets was one that I had. And I do think it's a bit of an occupational hazard for me, because if somebody asks what I do, you get one of a few responses. Whether it's, are you analysing me right now? Or, oh, are you? Oh, you should speak to my such about it. Mm. Or that they just start telling you all sorts of close and intimate things about themselves.
Everyone loves a freebie. Hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And I say, that's all well and good, but are you going next to the toilet or am I? So... Yeah. What's your guys' experiences of or thoughts on this topic in general?
I think it's a strange thing to try and be ready for, isn't it? Probably because you never know sort of if it's coming. I think there's a surprise of it. There's different ways that it can happen. You know, sometimes people prepare you, don't they? Say, I'd like to have a chat. In which case, I would assume, oh, we're breaking up. We're never going to see each other again. Which undoubtedly some unhealthy psychological response there. But you know, sometimes you're prepared for it, aren't you, to a certain extent? And people will say, you know, we need to have a conversation about something. I want to do this, which gives you a way of preparing, but doesn't let you know what you're preparing for. So you can be prepared in entirely the wrong way. And I've certainly got friends for whom, if they say, oh, there's a thing I want to talk to you about, they just freak out because they don't know what it is. Depends on the person. Some people need to be primed a little bit. I think I would tend to go, there are some bad things that I want to say to you. It's I don't know, frame it right. But you're right. Then there's people just start talking in the middle of something else. I think for one thing, being the recipient of that is, I guess, kind of a privilege. It says something that you're the person that someone has chosen to speak to, unless like you're the object of it and they're actually shouting at you, which is, I guess, less of a privilege, but maybe equally deserved. You know, that someone trusts you enough, even in a random setting, that, you know, they've decided that you are a trustable person, is quite significant, I think, for how it feels when you're receiving information.
I suppose from my perspective, go ahead, Matt.
You're right. No, I was just saying, you know, just to flash back to the when we first started doing the show, and I gave it no thought to what the reaction would be afterwards. I suppose I'd give it some thought to what the reaction would be. I just wasn't expecting people to speak directly and plainly to you. But that's what happened, and it took me aback. But I think it's weird, isn't it? Because you have that, there's a cross between feeling fairly honoured and privileged, the fact that someone would talk to you, and also it can get a bit much, you know, especially after an hour and a half of different people talking to you. I think I felt a bit of guilt about that, both those things, you know.
Yeah, you get a lot of people coming up to you after shows, don't you? And and just appreciating some of what you've talked about, and then I guess inevitably starting to share some of their own experiences.
Yeah, no, it's all right now, because I thought it through and I've realised what it is, and we also have professionals there as well, and so there's lots to sideline. But it did at first take me back a bit. It's weird, actually. It's prepared me now that if I have friends talk to me, it just feels like part of a conversation. It's not, you know, it's not like, it's, I mean, if someone chatted to me and started chatting about suicide or thoughts around that, there would obviously be concerns about where they're coming from. But I wouldn't react in the same way I would have done a year ago if someone mentions the S word.
What are some of the differences in the way that you would have reacted before versus now?
I think I would have taken a step back first, you know, and be like, it would have been a bit of a shock or a bit of a, I think it's like anything, isn't it? When you're not used to it, it feels like it's something different. But if you regularly having those sort of conversations, it's just another conversation. It just happens to be a very emotive one and a very painful one. But if you're used to it, I think I react better now. I'm not very good with a poker face. I think before I was like, but now it's like much more relaxed. I think you must be like that all the time, Wes. Nothing must flutter you, really. You must be great at poker, I think.
Well, I can't help it. I can't help but come at this from a professional perspective, because of course it's what I do day in, day out. But I've been thinking about it a bit when we decided that we would talk about this topic, and I suppose my mind went off in a few different directions, and I suppose it got me thinking about some of the things that we feel obliged to say in response to certain types of conversations. So maybe what we say when we hear somebody has died, or maybe what we say when we hear somebody is going through a separation or a relationship breakdown. So I thought that would be interesting to ponder. But then I was also thinking just about, like, what is our job, you know, like, not professionally, but like, what is the role of someone listening in response, you know, to heavy stuff? And professionally speaking, obviously, I think about this a lot and have been trained a certain way and that kind of thing. And it's interesting that you should say the thing about the poker face and whatever else, because actually, I wouldn't mind being impacted by somebody and showing that I was impacted. Obviously, it's not quite as black and white and straightforward as that and all that. But so, yeah, I don't know. I think there's probably a few interesting kind of things to think about with this topic. I deliver training a lot as well, talking about how we might want to try and be alongside someone when they're experiencing something difficult. And actually, I'm sure we'll get into some of it, but time and time again, it often boils down to a few simple things, and I guess the tendency is to complicate it, or to feel that it has to be complicated or something.
Or to try to fix it, of course, which is
absolutely
horrible
temptation.
Yeah. Like, well, that sounds terrible. I can definitely help you with that. It's like, that's not the purpose of this conversation. Yeah, I'm not looking for help. Whatever you're I don't know. In my own case of talking to my parents and stuff about what happened many years later, there's nothing they can do. There's nothing they can do to fix it. There's nothing they can do. They can be sorry. They can be sad that things happened. It can't be fixed. The reason I'm telling them isn't so they can fix it. It's not to break their hearts and make them sad. It's for me, for them. It's important for me to know that they know, and not because it's a matter of success or failure or guilt or anything. I can't help what they feel about that. But to have a more complete picture of me and who I am as their son felt important. Yeah, I needed them to know that, but I was also keenly aware that it was not going to be good. No one ever wants to be told that sort of stuff, and it was hard to prepare for. I don't remember much of it. I got lots of gaps, but I talked about that last time. But I think there's a certain amount of trust. What I was looking for was people who would listen and just go, yep. That sucks. I think I was never really looking for I'm sorry that happened or anything like that. And I think I realize that's true when I'm talking to other people, and then people are telling me about what they've lost and things. It's hard to know what your response is. My response often comes down to, dude, that really sucks. I accept and acknowledge what you're telling me, and that's crap. It's really, I don't like that happened to you. But I maybe offer to go out on some kind of joint murder patrol or something. But there's nothing I can do other than be a willing and empathic recipient, I think, in that situation.
What words were saying before about somebody dying and someone separating, and I always think within it, I had it recently with you're always trying to think of that you've got to come up with some kind of amazing line or something a bit original that you can't just say my thoughts are with you. I mean, everyone says that. I can't write that. I spent ages writing a card about a week or two ago. I just couldn't bring myself to write something that I'd know they would have received 400 times in a letter.
Sorry for your loss.
I just feel like sometimes that I think mental health conversations, it feels a bit easier, but it's still like that you're always trying to think of something.
Yeah.
Something brilliant.
I think it's because there is nothing to say. So we've, in society generated this series of platitudes that are the appropriate thing that you say in this situation, because it's an acknowledgement there is nothing of use that you can say or do. So we've got these rote lines, I'm sorry for your loss. I'm sorry that happened. Because otherwise you're just staring at someone. There is clearly a need to respond. I think if you're being given information, it's going, I'm shambling off is not the appropriate reaction. but you can feel like it is as well, you're like, oh, this is way too much. We're at a party, we're drinking heavily, and you've decided this is the time to unload about your childhood or whatever. Oh, cool, I thought we were going to talk about whether Kenobi is good or bad. It's a shock to receive stuff at times, and
context makes a difference.
Is it? Oh no, don't tell me that yet. Well, I'm assuming brief tangent. I'm assuming 5 out of 10 max, but could. All right.
You touched upon something when you were speaking earlier, Nick, about that perhaps there's something around what that person might want or need from sharing or speaking to you. And I guess sometimes somebody wants just to be listened to and heard. Maybe someone wants something acknowledged or to feel validated. Maybe somebody wants an opinion. Maybe someone wants help to fix or to find a solution. But I do think you're right in what you were saying, that perhaps there's a bit of a tendency for lots of us to slip into trying to fix or soften or make feel better. Yeah. I mean, I have my own ideas of what that's about. What do you think that's about?
Well, our desire to fix. I think it's about feeling like you have agency in the world, isn't it? You know, if someone comes to me with a problem, I'm like, well, I'll find you a solution to that. Someone comes to me with something that sounds like a problem, because someone sounding like they're upset or unhappy or that something went wrong feels like a problem. And if you're brought up in a problems need to be fixed sort of mindset, which I kind of am, then it's like, well, we can, you know, we can undo that. I don't know. We can take out bits of your brain. Or as I said, you know, we can go and mess someone up real bad. If that will help, it might not help, but it's probably a good practical solution. So it's surprising how often that one comes up, actually. I think for lots of people, you know, what's the response? Oh, that's really bad. Should we go and murder someone? That's exactly what Matt did. I think it's because it feels like a real, yeah, there is no fix. You can't fix what happened to someone in the past, but there is a desire
still
to
kill them.
we can't travel back in time. That's the annoying thing. It's, yeah, would you go and kill a baby Hitler? Problem. I think everyone would until they think about it for about 10 minutes. We want to fix things, and acknowledging that we can't fix them gives us an immense sense of powerlessness. We're there helpless next to someone who has just unburdened themselves. And you're like, what am I supposed to do now? If I can't
I agree.
What do I do? Well, I guess you hug them.
There's a friend of mine who's a comedian, and he won't mind me saying this because he does it in his routine and tells people. He told someone at work that he was in a bad place mentally, and the person walked away and then came back and said, "You're not a danger to anyone, are you?" That was their answer. Wow. But he was quick of mind to say, "Not up until this point, no." But people do react in weird ways, don't they? I mean, I guess they just, people are nervous as well, aren't they, you know, about what it means.
I think there's something about, you know, if someone shares something really difficult, that's difficult to hear, isn't it? And so I think some of it's probably a response to our own emotional kind of reaction to it as well, of wanting to soften it. I mean, it's difficult to see someone having difficulty, so if we can make it better, then that's better for us all, isn't it? You know,
the anti-altruistic, the altruistic principle. It's never really altruism. It's always to make ourselves feel better.
Well, yeah. So maybe what stops me just simply being alongside you when you're really struggling is that it's really uncomfortable.
Mm.
And so the temptation is to slide into making it, well, less uncomfortable. Has anybody watched the video about empathy? Well, I say video, Brené Brown, I guess maybe some of you guys will have heard that name, no?
No, I don't think so.
Worth looking up. She does a lot of talks around shame and vulnerability and empathy and all sorts of things. And there's a little snippet that's been pulled from one of her talks, and they've put a little animation alongside it. And actually, it's a really helpful short video. And what she's talking about is what empathy actually is. And in that, she talks about this tendency to silver line or try and fix and soften that kind of thing. And really what she's getting at is what an empathic response really is and what it really isn't, you know. So if someone tells us something crap has happened, if we try and go, well, at least this, and there's always this, have you ever considered this, you know. Whereas actually, an empathic response is a little bit like what you were saying earlier, Nick, which is, you know, that's heavy. That's, you know, just being alongside it. Listening to their stuff, holding back your own, and being with the feelings, I suppose. And that's difficult to do, isn't it?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Mm.
Yeah. And when we were talking about that, what it's like to be on the receiving end of heavy stuff and bad news or difficulty and that kind of thing. Yeah, there's the stock responses. Yeah, there's the, well, what do they need and everything else. And maybe they do want different things at different times. But I would guess more than anything, they probably just want a person to be alongside them, don't they?
I think that makes sense. That makes sense with my experience of giving information to others. It's like, it's this individual that I need to talk to. Sometimes it was, you know, but other times it's like, I need this to not just be inside my own head. This things become real and sometimes larger or smaller once they're externalized through, you know, through literal speech. Saying that things have happened is very different from thinking in your own head. it gives you a chance to process the information somewhat and, you know, rearrange it a bit. I found that a lot when I was reading stuff last time. And I was also doing actually all of the negative responses that you were describing there, whereas of saying a thing, well, I did this, but it wasn't that bad, really, and commenting in a way that was talking it down constantly, which
that
is
was, you were doing that for yourself.
Yep, yep, absolutely, absolutely defending myself by minimizing.
That was throughout the whole 45 minutes.
A great demonstration of how not to listen to oneself. But so, yeah, I can empathize with that. Desire to control, it's controlling my own narrative as well to a certain extent there, and yeah, maybe I wasn't as comfortable with it as I thought.
Well, I was just going to say, at the same time, that was yours to tell, wasn't it? And actually, yeah, you know what, you needed to do whatever you needed to do along the way to keep safe along the way, and that's okay, I think.
I guess that's true. I'm just amused that I did all the things.
The irony of it, you were doing it for yourself.
Yeah. Love irony and awkwardness. Yeah. Some of my favourite things. But yeah, very much doing.
You also mentioned something else a minute ago that I think is probably an interesting thing to consider. I think there's a whole lot to this topic, and already we've been talking for some time, but so it might be useful to try and present all the angles to ponder further. One thing was that the kind of environment we come from probably impacts the way we are able to listen or not, and how we are in the face of that. You said, you know, I was kind of raised in a bit of a problem solving kind of environment. And
oh, my dad's I'm an sure engineer. Other people, my mum's a teacher.
Yeah. It makes sense. I'm sure some people have come from environments where nobody ever spoke about anything heavy or emotional, and so that would be completely alien and uncomfortable. Mm. Or, you know, it might feel dangerous to some people to go anywhere near that. Or some might be panicked by it, and some people might be really kind of okay with it and quite naturally good listeners and good empathizers. So I think where we come from is going to speak a lot to how we are with this stuff. So I suppose if the point of this is to get us all thinking about what's probably the best way to respond, it's going to be useful to reflect on how we are with stuff, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, it's true that you may be interested in the other side of that as well. The other side of the empathy of receiving that information is being aware that the person giving you that information may also be from all of those things, all those conditions you just described about whether or not they are from a home that talks about things that solves problems, or has had a life of shame and is unable to speak, how much it may have taken them to get to the point of talking to you, which I think in some senses puts an even greater burden on you to not freak
it
out.
It kind of does, doesn't it? Oh, yeah.
You know,
I better get this right.
Yeah, on the other hand, you could be the person that they talked to, the 54th in line in the bus stop, and they told everyone in the bus stop, but then they also got wasted to the point where they could unburden themselves of that to anybody, to literally anyone. So you're still in a situation where it's like being in a special position of trust or something, isn't it? I don't know. I find it a hard thing to describe. But it won't have been an easy thing for them to come to. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't see it as a big problem or a thing that they needed to unburden themselves with. Even if it's a bad thing, if they're happy to just, you know, toss it in general conversation, they're probably okay-ish with it, or they're protecting themselves by flinging it into irrelevant conversation as a kind of jokey throwaway while crying inside, like, won't anyone ask me to follow up on this further? And it's like, but it's in the middle of a conversation about chess, this is weird. But maybe that in itself is sometimes a bit of a clue. God, people are difficult, aren't they?
Do you know what came through the episode for me completely? It's just the way that you, the reflective nature of you talking about yourself. It was remarkable. You know, just like, I wouldn't say dispassionate because that's the wrong word, but it was, I was trying to think of the right word actually, but I don't know what it is. But you just seem so measured, I think.
Considered? Measured, considered.
I wasn't expecting that, to be honest. I was really surprised.
Thought you were going to get tears out of me. No such luck, Mr. McGuinness.
I guess you were taking care of yourself along the way, though, Nick. Eh?
Oh yeah, no, most certainly, somewhat detached. In order to read the stuff, I had to go and find it first and read through a whole bunch of things and decide what I didn't want to read and what I did want to read. So I've already done some degree of pre-censoring. I didn't edit anything out of the stuff that I did read, but I certainly chose not to read others. Detachment helps. Detachment is a useful tool in exploring something. But I said this before. I think we only exist in the now, and the someone of 10 years ago is not really the same person. You know, we're reliant on them as a as a provider of information that informs who we are currently, but they're not the same person and they don't have the same emotional responses that we do. I think it is possible to look back with some degree of detachment that's a little bit legitimate, because I wouldn't respond in the same way as I would have done 10 years ago to almost anything. But again, yeah, that's me protecting myself from my horrific earlier versions of me, who otherwise will damage me constantly, I guess. Oh, this is sounding worse than I thought. I was trying to offer that as like a positive explanation of how I was helping myself, but now I'm more concerned about myself now.
It's good.
We are going to have to pause this recording in a sec and rejoin the call, because I forgot we're no longer on like a pro account.
Well, we normally go for around anywhere between 35 and 45 minutes, don't we?
So. That is true. We're going to get kicked out in a minute. So if we could rejoin and wrap up then at that point, couldn't we?
That's probably a good suggestion.
Although this will be a wonderful interlude for anyone listening to it.
So why don't we just pause for a second so Neil knows exactly where we are and then we can start again. Then you could...
I'm going to end it and then everyone can rejoin. That was fun, I like that. All right, see you guys in a sec.
So after that little pause, we're going to wrap up then, aren't we? This has turned out to be a bigger topic than I think anticipated, really.
Yeah, the world is overly complicated, isn't it?
Yeah. But there's something about considering where we're at and what our normal response is to stuff. That's probably helpful, you know? Mm-hmm. Am I panicked by it? Do I try and fix? Do I have a tendency to do this, that, or the other? There's something about we agree that maybe different people want different things. And it's all right to check that, I think, isn't it? And then there was probably the thing about that usually it's just about being alongside and offering some kind of empathic response. What are you guys taking from this?
It certainly makes me think that most of the things that you said, I completely agree with. Not that I'm disagreeing strongly with any of them. So I realize is what that sounds like.
Some of it was rubbish.
I agree with most of what you said. And yet, I think all those things are true. It also made me think about whether the person who's hearing it is ready to hear it and what you can do about that. And that might not be the right problem, because that's the kind of problem that would then stop you from ever talking to someone else. Because if you've got a thing that you need to get out, then worrying about the other person too much will break you and stop you from being able to do it.
But I think that does stop people from talking, actually.
It does, although I wonder.
I don't want to burden other people. I don't want to do this, that, the other.
Well, they're people. They can be burdened. Yeah, we're humans. We're sponges for information and emotions. We can definitely soak up some more. What we do with it later may well be another conversation for that. But it occurs to me, as the person receiving information, that yes, you are receiving stuff, and it's going to be hard for them, and it's going to be hard for you. Maybe there are occasions where you can say, "Look, I just can't do this right now," and being able to do that in a way that isn't really damaging is probably worth some thought. I don't know what that would be.
Sensitively, and I think a lot of it is about just trying to be a real, genuine person in the face of it, you know, like and bring some honesty into the mix, you know, instead of trying to say something that sounds right. It could just be, I don't know what to say, or it could be, you know, I'm sure nothing I can say that make this feel better, but, you know, I'm here or whatever. And in fact, going back to that Brené Brown video, I'm pretty sure she says something to that effect on there as well. It's like, I don't know what to say, but I'm glad you told me. And, you know, stuff like that. I think those are perfectly fine responses, you know.
Yeah, I guess it is always like, you're really freaking me out with this information is also true. And I think the fact that it being an honest response is probably more important than anything else.
Honest and sensitive, I guess.
Yeah. And I think from what you said, it's okay to ask, is there anything that you want me to do?
Yeah, you know, what do you need?
And the answer to that may be nothing. Or it may be a drastic course of action that you have to think about later, which is also
murder.
Yeah, go and get the shovel, love. Mm.
Yeah, murder or a hug?
Those are the two things that we need following any conversation. Maybe both or just one. I don't know. How about you, Matt?
I just think it's quite useful to listen to the two of you in looking at about what people expect as a response, because I know I've made that sort of mistake in the past where I jump in to try and say something, fix something, or
Me too.
You know. Yeah. Me three.
And so it is good to be like that. I would be careful about how I'm glad Wes said honesty with I can't remember what the right word was.
Sensitivity.
Shut up! I can't listen to this anymore. Maybe honesty.
It's a response that you may get.
Well, some stuff could trigger your own stuff, couldn't it? You know.
Yeah.
So I think it would be all right to say that I'm not able to give you what you might need from this. So like, this is difficult for me, or whatever. You know. Yeah.
It's an emotional minefield. All right.
Good topic.
Yeah, it was. Good idea on that. Yeah.
As ever, I feel like I'm going to walk away from this thinking it through a lot more.
Yeah.
Well, that's the last thing we need. Point, yeah, we
what
should.
More thought?
That's the last thing we want for this podcast is to go and think about things later. Good God. Yeah. That would be terrible.
If anybody else wants to share their kind of thoughts on this, you know, listening, that would be really... we would love to hear what people think and have to say about it.
That'd be really interesting.
And the same for kind of future topics and things, I suppose.
Yes, please. If you have ideas, by all means, find us on Facebook or Tinternet. We are out there, and we'd like to hear thoughts on both what we do and what we should talk about, and on our ideas as well, because we are by no means perfect humans. The very, very, very direct opposite, I would say.
Close. Yeah. I know, you're right. Cool. All right then.
I don't know what to say that you just said that, Nick, but I'm just glad that you told me.
You're welcome, and I thank you for your candor and sensitivity. All right, guys, until next time, look after yourselves and each other. Exhausted
with some grief. If you've been affected by anything that we've talked about tonight, that's cool. We were kind of hoping you would be. If you haven't been affected by anything tonight, then that's great too. You're probably fine. Of course, if you say you're fine, there's a good chance you aren't. So you might also have been affected. And if you've been affected before, you probably will be again. Please talk to someone. It can get better, and together we can survive. We are what we overcome. And this poor little boy, grounded by the sun, paler by his side, but something strikes.